Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colquhoun meeting for a work session today on case numbers PU 14-108 and 109. It is Friday, July 18th, approximately 10 after 9. Before we get going, Commissioner Fedorchuk, did you have something you wanted to talk about briefly?
I do. We've got our meetings coming up in August with the various investor-owned utilities to talk about their response to the 111D. And I think that I've heard of a lot of favorable comments from those folks. They're eager to have that discussion. It occurred to me this week at NARUC that we should also invite the RECs or the Basin Electric and that group in, because they're going to be going through the same process. And so I'm wondering if you all would be amenable to extending that or continuing that conversation either through the lunch hour or after the lunch hour to open up a spot for, and it's probably Basin would be able to represent them since they're the generator. Well, and then also Minn Kota and Basin.
I think it's a great idea. I'm open the afternoon of the 19th, if you two are.
That works for me.
Okay, so let me just double-check my schedule. And then also, do we have a letter that's gone out to them inviting them, or can we do a letter sort of explaining what it is we're looking for?
All I did was call them and told them to come.
Okay. Well, maybe
we should do something
a little more official and invite them and ask them what we're looking for the discussion and what the layout, because I've had questions, how is this, what's the format, and how is this all going to work?
Could you draft a letter and put it on admin? Is there enough time for that? Should be on an admin.
Okay. Yeah, there's enough time.
Well, I think the one Otter Tail gave us in their PI meeting was like the perfect meeting. I mean, so if you use the Otter Tail one as a format, that they did a good job with that.
When are you talking tonight? Didn't we have this thing scheduled for?
We do August 19th. It's scheduled in the morning. Each one's got an hour. And Julie's recommendation was good, that we could just go at, like, let's say 1:30 with Minn Kota and 2:30 with Basin, something like that. It's just that I think what you were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be the same, just extending it for those two.
Okay.
And, you know, you could even, if Great River Energy, if we wanted to talk to them too, because they've got significant generation in North Dakota.
I would think we would want to include them as well, yes.
Yeah. So maybe we should start at 1 then, and just 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4.
And can
are you wed to a letter type thing, or would I just call them and get an agenda arranged?
I think we should do a letter.
And do a, okay.
I mean, you can call them and all that, but I think we should have a letter they can share with staff. And I mean, otherwise it's just a conversation to one person and then they're left describing that to the rest of their staff, and it involves more than one player at each of these companies.
Yeah.
So right now I suggested a letter so it's in the docket what you did or asked or whatever is the record of it.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we've got Otter Tail, MDU, and NSP coming in for 9, 10, and 11 o'clock. That was each having that time slot.
Yep.
So if I do another thing in the afternoon, you want me to give Basin a time slot and Minn Kota a time slot? And
Great River a time slot. Yeah, same thing. That makes sense. Give me each an hour.
You want just maybe the distribution RECs to have one slot together? Or
what do you mean, like a central power, or what do you mean?
Like maybe NDREC or somebody.
Oh, their parent?
They could come with Basin, couldn't they?
We could have Basin cover their. Basin does the G&T stuff, and so does Minn Kota. So the distribution co-ops, I guess, when I think about it,
they
wouldn't even have to invite them.
And he'll probably stop by for the whole thing and listen.
Yeah, okay. So I'll just make a slot for Basin and Minn Kota.
And Great River.
And GRE, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Randy, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Anything else, Commissioner?
Oh, and then this is just this. A lot of the other states I noticed are calling these workshops.
Okay.
So can we just call them that, workshop, 111D workshop?
Sure. You're aware South Dakota is doing one
I just heard the 31st of July.
On the 31st in Sioux Falls. Just let you know.
Good. Yeah, the one thing, Gina McCarthy was at NARUC and spoke and said, you know, really pushed early feedback. So we should try to turn around whatever it is we're going to say, you know, quickly after our workshops. And then that same letter should go to Dave Glott, or he should be CC'd or something, because we talked about inviting him as well to participate or to listen. And I've heard very favorable feedback from everybody on the fact that we're working together with the health department. That seems to be very comforting to the folks involved in this, that, you know, it's going to be a joint effort.
Okay. I remember we had talked about Basin coming in sometime in September, so we'll just have them speed this up.
Well, they'll tell us what they know then, just as a placeholder. Does anybody have a desire to go down to Sioux Falls on the 31st? Well, because that's closing up pretty quick, too.
Somebody should go.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I mean, because I don't know that I...
Somebody wants to go, I'll ride with them.
Well, let's just... Can we add that to... When's our next meeting? Not for a while, right?
30th.
Yeah, that's kind of late. Well, let's just do this. If Randy or Julie, one of you can make it, let me know. I'm trying to figure out if I can get there. Jay?
I can't. I know I'm at a wedding that end of that week.
Okay.
Do you know what time? Is it like first thing in the morning in Sioux Falls, or is it in the afternoon?
I can find out.
Would you?
Bet we could Google it right now.
I could potentially do that, but... Kind of depends on, I don't know what kind of, I want to find out what kind of schedule they have too.
All right, well, let's keep that in front of us, Jared, and we'll go from there. Okay, anything else before we get into that?
That's it.
All right, so the work session that we're here to do, Julie, I believe it's your portfolio.
It is.
Turn it over to you. Unless, Randy, do you have any opening comments? I didn't know.
No comments.
Feels like this was a long time ago that we had this this hearing. Jerry, you've got a draft. Jerry and Alana, we have a draft order here with two distinct alternatives. Can you walk through and summarize? I've got the Mike Diller's. I've gone through Mike Diller's testimony again on why he believes that the fixed charge is the appropriate approach. But can you walk through that and explain or remind us of the various benefits of and drawbacks of each of the approaches here?
Sure. The order basically begins with the preliminary stuff, is the same as you've seen before in the notice and so forth. And then when you get down to the last paragraph on the first page, we start talking about the method of the cost recovery. I think that was really the issue that is left in this case that's up in the air yet. And what I've done in the order here, if you were to adopt a settlement, I think you'd need to explain that we're doing something different here. It is, I don't think you want to set a precedent of putting demand relating charges in the customer charge.
And we're gonna check our case precedent for how many times we have done the opposite and said so.
But that is, for as long as I've been in regulation, there has been an effort by staff to hold the customer charges down and an effort by the utilities to raise the customer charges. And the customer charge represents a fixed form of income to the utilities, and so they like it. It helps to smooth out their earnings. especially in years when weather is causing problems with their earnings and so forth. On the other side of it, though, the customers, when they get their bill, the ones that pay any attention to it, the first thing they see is how much that customer charge is. And they're thinking, I got to pay that much for nothing? I didn't use any, I haven't even used anything yet, and I got to pay this. And it rubs them wrong. And so especially the residential class. And that's been just one of the ways that it is.
On a volumetric charge, those who contribute more to the peak pay for the, which is what this is, a peaking unit, right? So on a volumetric charge, those who are contributing to the peak are paying.
So if you
is that correct? Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
So if you went to rate design schools and so forth, you would get drilled in your head.
That's not in the record.
Over and over again, that there are three types of charges. There's customer-related charges, and they vary with the number of customers that come on the system. And those are the charges that get billed in the customer charge and the fixed charge. There's demand-related charges, and they're related to how big the load is. The cost of the plant, the bigger the plant you have to cover a bigger load, the more the plant costs. And so the capital costs of the plant are generally allocated on a demand basis. And then the other charge is energy charge. And energy is really related to how long the plants run. Things like gas for coal for fuel in the plant, and variable O&M expenses, stuff like that. If you have a baseload plant, there would probably be an allocation to energy because the baseload plant is saving costs on energy. Part of the reason for building baseload is to get lower energy rates. A peaking plant is more allocated on the demand because its primary purpose is to cover that peak demand.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have here is a peaking plant, and traditional regulation would allocate most of the costs of that into the demand component.
Mm-hmm. It's curious to me that Diller is advocating for the opposite.
Mike, so if we're going to put this into the customer charge, I think that we should explain. And so what I tried to do here, first, I give you the language roughly that would tell them to go back to the drawing board on the settlement on that charge. Or alternatively, I explained that Mike testified that the last class cost of service study indicated that the residential small commercial classes were not paying enough in their customer charges now to cover the costs that the survey had assigned into the customer component. And so that could be used as a reason for putting the customer component charges here into this tariff. If I
it's like two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's not like principally the way to do it, then
it could be done that way. But
the other problem with that is you don't know that you're ever going to pay anything under this, so you don't know that you're ever going to fix that
right.
problem if you never charge anything.
And if I might add, you don't really know that it's a problem.
Right.
Because just because staff did not challenge their class cost of service study in the last rate case doesn't mean that there weren't ways to do it differently that could have maybe lessened whatever the numbers were in the customer charge. Keep in mind that the objective of the utilities when they do these surveys is to make that customer charge bigger. And the objective of the staff when they do a review on them is to make it smaller. So there's a lot of ways to do allocations and calculations in these surveys. And so in the past, the commission has always said that they would not mechanically apply them for rate design.
If I'm not mistaken, Tammy, we do have to get through the record and make sure this is in there sufficiently. Otherwise, we have to add it and give MDU an opportunity to challenge it. But if I'm not mistaken, we tried to ask all of this through questions.
We had them written up.
And one of the questions I recall asking Tammy, but I have to go back and check, was whether they had an objection. I mean, whether they were fighting for the customer charge methodology or just agreed to it in settlement. And I recall her saying it was okay either way. That's what I remember.
Just a basic question, though. Don't settlement agreements, we either accept or reject them as is? You can't start tweaking with them. Otherwise, you got to go back to the whole beginning.
I think if you didn't like it, that if you let the parties know that they're listening to the work session, that they would probably revise the settlement agreement, is my thought. Because
yeah, but you don't know that. We've had cases where we've had a settlement agreement that was the deal, and there was no switching anything.
Well, frankly, MDU, when they first filed this case, they filed in the kilowatt hour charge and the volumetric charge. It was only in the settlement that they twisted it back like this.
That's one of the reasons we did the notice, because there was a different substantive thing in there for people. But
it would be the same thing here. If it isn't exactly what was filed, then it's got to be re-noticed in the whole thing.
Well, there's a couple possibilities here. In theory, don't shoot this down without just letting it be out there, but in theory, you don't have to answer that question now. Nobody's taking any extra money. Nobody's charging anything extra at this point. You could defer it, ask for additional justification both ways or whatever in writing. You could say the tariff's approved, but because there's no guarantee that any charges are coming through that tariff necessarily anytime soon.
Right.
That's one possibility. And the other possibility is to say, well, the settlement would be acceptable to us if it were this way, and see what the parties do.
Isn't there one more? I mean, there's at least one more alternative, just saying no to the whole thing.
That's another alternative.
Because I think if we go charge, I think the demand charge. But I'm still, I don't know about just rejecting the whole thing and tell them to come in for a rate case.
That's.
I mean, they're in a build cycle right now, and so part of me is, I'm not leaning one way or the other here. Other than if we do the charges, I think the demand charge. But I'm even back to the very basic of just throw it back to them and say, come in for a rate case. They're building stuff all over the state.
And I thought about that
order, too.
It needs a lot more work to do that. The order needs some work to do that.
Not if you base it on we're not happy with the settlement.
No, that we could deny the settlement, but then I think we need some findings and conclusions. We have to talk about it.
Yes.
Well, let's not forget there's some positive things in the settlement. I mean, there's this settlement provides a tool to go after any over earnings that they have in the next year and two years, I believe. And I think that there's some positive things in this settlement that are good for customers that we would not have if we reject the whole thing.
Mike testified to those when you asked those, so they're
right. So I think my biggest concern is the method and getting the method right. And I'm still kind of confused by Mike's comments. The unit is not expected to run more than 1% of the time through 2020. It is primarily a fixed cost unit placed into service to meet peak load requirements. As such, the cost should be assigned on a demand basis and not a volumetric basis. And that's just exactly opposite of what you said.
I'm not sure what he said there.
Well, that's exactly what he said.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he said, though. I know you can read it. I mean, what he said is exactly the reason to charge it to the demand component and not put it in the customer charge.
Fixed. Right.
Well, I have a question on that, and getting back to your theory or to the traditional rate setting theory that a peaking plant would be paid for with demand charges instead of fixed charges. Was that at a time when a peaking plant was built to make sure there's enough power a couple times a year when it's the coldest or the hottest for peak demand, whereas as we have shifted our base load from coal or natural gas to wind, now we build peaking plants not so much for a peak use time, but for when the wind doesn't happen to blow. And so is there a shift in that traditional theory, maybe, that this isn't just a volumetric thing, it's a weather-related thing? And, well, I guess the volume often was with weather, too, hot or cold. Now it's not a matter of hot and cold weather, it's a matter of how much wind is blowing.
Yeah, I think it's still driven by how big your load is. You have to have enough capacity to cover your load. You know, if you get yourself a little portable generator to go camping with, and you hook too much stuff to that generator, it's just going to go and shed the load. You're not going to have anything running then. Your lights, everything will go out because you tried to put too much on your generator. And that's what happens with utilities. If they try to put too much on the generator will trip off, and you won't have anybody. And so they got to have a big enough generator to cover the load. So as your load grows, demand increases, you need more generation. And
but when I went west on day before yesterday in the afternoon, it was not should not have been a real peak time. It was, you know, probably low 80s, and the customers who were getting power from the wind farms west of here were not getting any power from there. I mean, there's none of them moving a bit. And so it's a different type of need for peaking plants now than it was when they were just for a couple times a year. Yeah.
Usually wind is just for energy. You don't have to run the plant as long, but you still need that plant. Or somehow or other, you need capacity to cover the load if the wind's not blowing. And it's a demand component. If you charge it on a demand basis, the idea is that it provides incentive for the customers not to use as much power at one time. Buy the refrigerator that doesn't have as big an engine in it, or as big a motor on it, things like that. Don't choose an electric hot water heater if you're worried about your electric demand. Get a gas one. Those are the kind of signals you want to send with your pricing to the consumers that in the long term delays the need for a new plant.
So the options are, Alana, you were kind of explaining them. We could... I'm leaning more towards going on the demand charge and not accepting this volumetric or the customer charge approach on this because it does seem to fly in the face of sort of traditional rate making and some of those principles. And I don't know where my colleagues are, but if we were to explain the options again for that in terms of how we send the signals to the company to see if they're interested in changing it to that, coming up with what it would be, approving the tariff without settling on, isn't one of the options approving the tariff and settling on a methodology when it comes time to use a tariff?
We have in the tariff the charge listed as a per kilowatt hour charge or as a per customer charge.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's just set at zero right now. So.
Or approving a rider.
The tariff shows what the charge will be, what kind of charge it will be. So if you approve the tariff, you're approving
the method.
Right. I think you have to say something about what is the acceptable method, unless you want to just say we're not happy with it and the whole settlement is not approved. Because then you would not have anything approved at that point, and you'd have to go back to the original filing. I wanted to tell the commission, a settlement is a contract between the two parties, and when they put words in there, and this, you know, we're only bound by this if everything's approved, it kind of means between each other. If it's not approved, if part of it's not approved, they don't owe each other anything anymore. They're not bound by any, like, parts A, B, and C if D is not approved. But it doesn't restrict the commission from deciding the case however it wants to decide the case. If you were to decide the case that the settlement's approved except for changing this methodology, we're not happy with that. We like everything else. It's a deal. If the company changes the methodology, if the company doesn't, the whole thing's disapproved. You can say that in an order. You can say, I've approved everything in the settlement except I'm changing the word in paragraph 3 to 30 from 20. If that order, if they don't ask to rehear that order and explain why they don't want to do that, it's an effective order. So you can, so to speak, tweak the settlement. The burden shifts to the, even in an order. I mean, and yes, you can say you're tweaking it in a work session, and that's before an order, and they can hear that and maybe change things. But even after an order, that's effective unless they do something to say to you, no, thank you. I'm asking you to reconsider this, or I'm going to withdraw, or whatever. I mean, that company doesn't have to have that tariff, even if you've ordered it, approved, if they don't like the way you tweaked it. So I think the commission needs to think they do have a very broad array of choices. Don't feel constrained by that language in the settlement that says, this is off the table if anything changes. It might be between the two of them, but it doesn't have to be. It just means they're entitled to decide as two parties whether to stick with it or not. Okay? So what I hear you saying, Commissioner Fedorchuk, was approve the settlement because you think there are other good parts in it and change the method for recovery. Mm-hmm. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
What about the pipeline? I had some notes here about the pipeline being repurposed. Where does that tie into any of this? Did I miss all
they,
that?
They refiled their case earlier.
Yeah, and that has to be in the order.
That's got
to
be somewhere here.
It is in the order.
So
no, I mean the approval of the change.
Oh, no, they revised it and withdrew it, which is noted in the order. But anyway.
It's noted in which
they,
order?
It's just a minor thing, but we have to approve that revision. Okay. Say so in here. So.
They will worry about that in their gas. It's a gas expense.
Right. And we had to put it in there somewhere, I think.
Yeah. For us, it would be paid through the fuel cost. That money would go through the fuel cost adjustment because it's a cost of fuel, cost of gas to run the plant.
I still want to, Julie, do you have any other quick questions?
No, go ahead. Not right now, I don't.
I wanted to explore more what Randy was saying because I think he's onto something. I know what you told him, and I want to walk through one more time, okay? So traditionally, we've had baseload generation out there, good coal plants, nuke plants, chugging along. It gets real cold, real hot, then we got to fire up peakers because of strictly hot or cold, or something drops out or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, but now we do have a model of where you've got wind in the grid that's blowing at some percentage of the time. And then when the wind drops down, something's got to fill that void because you can't ramp up your coal that quick or your nukes that quick.
No.
So walk through me how this is a whole different setup now of how we assess charges. And maybe this old matrix isn't right anymore.
You do basically have a more variable load now.
Okay.
And there are some coal plants that do load following to some extent. They operate within a range where they go up and down a bit to follow the loads coming on and off. And so when the wind is contributing to the supply side,
okay,
really you could think of it in the same way as all of a sudden the load is more variable than it used to be, and so it's harder to follow. You're still going to be able to follow it somewhat with your coal plants. And you know, you really don't want to curtail the coal plants too much because they're less efficient when they're curtailed, but that's another story. You're also going to run your peakers differently, trying to follow that load as necessary too. You may run your peakers less because the wind was blowing. You may run them a little bit more if the wind is not blowing.
But the potential to run peakers now with more wind in the grid is larger than it ever has been before. Because you always have the same variabilities for hot and cold, but now you get the variability of just wind availability.
Yeah, I think they're more important because they're backing up the wind.
But to the point I've heard Commissioner Crispin say before, that we're developing a grid on wind and gas and how those charges might be different. I mean, that's a whole other kettle of fish, but it's an interesting point you bring up.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's addressed in one of those rate design documents that I haven't looked at in
that's
some time.
That's larger than this, but it's...
And we should put it in the record. Some update from the NARUC manual or something.
Well, it also seems that the company would have reflected running it more, and they said they're only anticipate running this 1% of the time through 2020. So that doesn't suggest that they're, which is maybe they're underestimating it.
We got 111D rules that are out there that we don't even know the future of the coal plants out here. And so to say they know they're not going to run it on all this uncertainty.
It could run.
But where you're going with that discussion, though, is a possibility that a peaking plant should have a bigger energy component in its cost allocation. So it should be split between demand and energy more because of that. So that's an argument that can be made. Mm-hmm. But I don't see where it has anything to do with the customer charge.
Got it. Okay.
There is one other thing I should mention while we got this, and that is that, you know, we've had some movement in the gas cases, natural gas cases, to put distribution charges that were charged volumetrically before into the customer component. And I've supported that, and we've done it for NSP. And I want to point out that when we've done that, one, the cost of gas has always been held out and billed to the individual users based on what they use. There was never any thought of putting any of that in a fixed charge. And in this case, this is a cost of electricity. So, I mean, it would be similar to putting the cost of gas in a fixed charge. So we're talking about different things here. The other thing is with the gas rates, really we don't have as much variance in the usage between customers. And so it's a small amount of money that would go into a usage component that doesn't vary big between customers that we were fudging a little bit to get rid of that volumetric charge in the distribution component. So it's just, in my mind, it's a different situation here.
How will you see this playing out? Let's say it's approved in some shape or form, and then we have the next rate case come in. Does this all start over again? How do you see that playing out?
I believe the proposal was to do this as a stopgap until another rate case comes. And so this charge then would go away and it would get mixed into base rates.
Now, where does it say that in our order? Or where does it say that clearly that this will be addressed in the next rate case?
It's not,
attached to the order. But we can repeat it.
Well, that's it. I guess I still don't know.
A settlement becomes part of the order. I mean, all the stuff in it is part of the order. So I'll find it if you want to do
it. I think I remember it in the settlement.
But if we do that, I would like to have it even a little bit clearer. This is in effect until the next general rate case is applied.
And I think that's a good idea.
Well, I don't like all these tariffs and riders, but I do appreciate not having to go through a rate case every 16 months, too. Because they have a lot of stuff out there hanging, all those ADPs we've given and those peaker plants up in Watford City area. I don't think those are in anybody's rates yet.
So we'll add something to the order.
If it's not in here, we'll put it in the order anyway.
Yeah. put it in there and will be reconsidered during the next rate case or something.
Well, we'll say, we can just say it's effective until.
I know it goes without saying, Patrick, but sometimes I can say it again. Who knows? Might not be the three of us the next time a rate case comes. It is.
Well, our rider's always up for extinction when you have a rate case?
Yeah, everything's, okay. You're doing rate design, so it's all on the okay. table.
But this is not say the tariffs back in, it says the adjustment as opposed to the rider.
Yeah. There is some language in the settlement that the recovery costs remain in effect subject to recalculation at the next rate case.
Down page 4. Look it up there.
Alrighty.
Okay, so.
But speaking of saying things that maybe go without saying, but just to make it clear, in looking at this, do we want to talk about theories of rate making and such in the order? Is that something we've traditionally done, or was that just added because you felt that the settlement was non-traditional?
Yeah, I really put it in there to explain the precedent we would be setting if we allow this in the customer charge.
And deviating from all the other precedents.
Yeah.
That's kind of where that's going.
Yeah. I didn't want to do it without some kind of a discussion.
Mm-hmm. I actually came across, we get these tips from the Supreme Court, and one of them was the importance of precedent. Unless there is a rational basis to deviate. I mean, either you say, oh, I made a mistake, I'm changing my precedent because I screwed that one up, or you stay with it unless there's a rational basis to deviate. I just saw that a couple weeks ago. So that's the kind of thing we'd have to talk about our cases or something,
but,
and why we were deviating.
If the settlement were revised and just accept it, I wouldn't think we'd have to go into this discussion at all in the order.
Okay. So I think I heard you and I are kind of semi-agreeing on the demand if we're going to do that, didn't I, Jules?
Yeah, that's where I think we should go.
Okay. Commissioner, you're still deliberating? Fair enough. Fair enough.
I would probably be fine with this settlement too, but
the way it is.
Yeah, but I certainly think that the portfolio holder wants to work on it a little more, and I am favorable to doing that as well.
Okay. All right. So what are we going to work? You're going to, are we going to propose it the way it's written, and or are we going to ask the parties to, or you want to check back and see what Tammy said in the testimony about whether or not, I was just looking at her pre-filed testimony.
I don't think she said it in there. I asked her the question, if I recall. I need to go back and find that.
Yeah.
But, and also I think we should give them a small bit of time to digest what they've been hearing here today.
I think it keeps narrowing down. They either change the settlement agreement to talk about the demand, or they leave it the way it is, and then we have an order that says we reject part of it and change something different. Let them make that choice.
Right. I mean, I'd be kind of surprised if they were super concerned about change. They're still going to get whatever, you know, charges they need. Just the methodology would be different.
If I were them and saw some direction or some indication from the commission that the settlement was going to be rejected, I would probably change it So if we give them some time and see if that's what they do.
Yeah. Well, I think there are, like I said, there's some positive things in the settlement. The revenue sharing in 2014, the fact that it kicks in only if they need it, I like that.
Yeah.
And it also provides, you know, a more of a, what's the word I'm looking for? An ease of rate increases, you know, versus waiting until they have a couple more things to add on in the full rate case, and then the increase to customers is going to be more significant. This allows it to come in a more gradual, is what I'm looking for, gradual basis.
I agree, and I don't think that the customer charge volume metric charge to them should be that big a deal. On the customer end of it, the customers won't even notice it if it's a volumetric charge. If you put in their customer charge, it's going to jump at them.
Okay, anything else?
This is a theory question, though, but should they notice it? I mean, they're going to be paying it. Do we want a system where, we're able to let this stuff happen and no one will notice, or... is it important that they do?
I think you want to make the rate adjustments for them as smooth as you can, rather than a big adjustment. It would be a couple dollars a month in the customer charge. I don't know, that's just my thought on rate design.
Well, yeah, and going.
But
with
that's the problem with all these tariffs and riders is that you never get a true picture of it because it's all piecemealed everywhere. Transmission riders and wind riders and all the other riders.
Yeah. Well, there's pros and cons. In some respects, as a customer, I sort of like the riders because I see how much I'm paying for each thing, and I think it's kind of interesting. But the total picture is what you pay, your
and
total
your
bill.
Riders can be misleading, too. Like there was this wind rider, and it made people think they were paying more for wind energy because it was a separate item on the bill,
uh-huh.
when even it was less than the power would have cost from somewhere else.
Bill would have been, yeah.
Yeah, they see it as an add-on.
There used to be lengthy discussions here about how to word those line items and whose name would be associated with them. They were refunds, commissions.
Yeah.
Don't you remember those Wilson-based?
Yeah.
Commissioner Chris, anything else today?
No, but that's funny.
Commissioner Fedorchak, anything else today?
No.
All right, we'll go ahead and close the work session. Thank you all very much.
Let's keep on this so we can wrap this thing up. It feels like I'm not sure why we had such a big gap from the hearing until now. If it was just a scheduling issue, but I would like to get this wrapped up here in the next, you know, near term.
We could bring it on the next meeting to schedule another work session.
Yeah, or an order.